Welcome to It's All About the Story, Grief Stories That Connect Us. This podcast takes you into the lives of people who have gone through loss and have come out the other side to experience joy again. Each story is someone's lived experience and reveals how wrestling with grief can turn loss into wisdom. You might even find some of these insights helpful in your own grief journey. Come, meet the people like yourself who have experienced loss and who now openly share their story with us. And now, here is your host, Rick Berg.
Well, welcome everybody to It's All About the Story, Grief Stories That Connect Us. I'm your host, Rick Berg, and it is wonderful to be together once again. You know, I've been thinking a lot about calling and what we do professionally as people. And sometimes we have a job and sometimes we have a calling. And I think there's sometimes a difference between those two things. And as I speak to people in the grief world and many of my interviews that I've done, people who enter into grief or end of life, it becomes more than just a job. It becomes a calling that's come out of somewhere in their life. And it's no different with our guest, Audrey White, today. And I really wanted to explore her story with you and hope it will be encouraging to you and it'll be helpful and you'll have some wisdom here as we share together. So Audrey, welcome to It's All About the Story.
Oh, thank you, Rick. I'm so excited to be here and share my story with you and your listeners. My work is definitely my passion and my calling, and it's something I never expected to do. This is not something that I thought I would be here, but it's so natural and it's so much a part of my life to kind of normalize the conversation around death and dying and grief and loss and the losses that we experience just throughout life.
Yeah. Well, in our pre-interview, I was again awestruck with the numerous losses that you experience. I mean, in all kinds of flavors that have kind of resulted in your calling. And I'm wondering if you could just share a little bit of your. I know it's a big story. it's really big. But maybe can you just kind of touch on your own personal journey, which kind of led you into this passion that you're now a part of in your life?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So, you know, growing up, I was the youngest of three kids, the only daughter. There's 15 years between my brother and myself, my oldest brother and myself. And never felt like I fit into this family. I always felt like this alien. And it wasn't really until 2005, when my father was dying, that I really understood my place in the family. And so it was the fall of 2005, and my dad had a brief illness, went into the hospital, and I flew out to see him. They were living in Texas at the time, and my brother had been there, and he was kind of getting a little bit better. So when I got there, it's like, oh, okay, you know, I knew when I left California, I knew that he was dying, and I wasn't prepared for this. I was in my mid-30s. I had two small children, and I'm like, I'm just not ready to say goodbye. And the experience, you know, we didn't really know because the healthcare workers weren't really upfront with what was going on. Mm. And so that made it really challenging for both my mom and I, because we were like, oh, he was getting better. And you know, we could tell he was kind of failing during the day, and we didn't want to leave that evening, and we left to go home. Neither one of us could sleep very well, and we got a call at 5:30 in the morning that they were they life flighted him to another larger hospital. And it wasn't until that point that the doctor was like, you know, there's nothing more we can do. Mm. And I saw my mother just kind of sink back into her chair and just really fall. And I knelt down beside her and I said, Mom, we got this. This is birth. Death is just birth. And we know how to do birth. Mm. And I don't know where those words came from, but it was just something within me that I was like, no, we got this. And so that night we held vigil. We, you know, with my aunts and uncles, we were waiting for my brother to come back. He had left to go back to Tennessee at the time. And it was just this beautiful time of singing and crying and laughing. And, you know, as soon as my brother arrived, both my mom and my brother just collapsed. They were crying. And I went around to the side of my father's bed and put my hand on his heart and hand on his head and just held him as he let go. And it was in that moment that I'm like, this is why I'm here. This is why I'm a part of this family who never really expressed emotion, never, you know, talked about a lot of things. And it's like, I know how to do this. Mm. And it was just the most natural thing. And then kind of fast forward, if you want me to continue on. So I knew at that point that I wanted to work within grief mm-hmm. and loss. And I just didn't know how to get there. Mm-hmm. So I went on with my career in biotech and, you know, raising my kids. And, you know, 2020 happened and the whole world stopped. Mm-hmm. So we were, you know, it started in March for me. I had so many consecutive losses that year. I lost 8 family members within a year, none to COVID, but some that were very unexpected. Mm-hmm. And, it was a cousin and an uncle, and then my cousin's wife and another cousin and my aunt. 13 days later, my mother died. 6 weeks later, her last sister died. And so during that time, you don't have a chance to grieve, right? The world was shut down. We couldn't gather. We couldn't come together as a family to celebrate their lives. We couldn't come together to support one another. And so you had these multiple losses, mm-hmm. you know, not just the loss of your loved ones, but it was the loss of feeling that sense of family and community of coming together. It was the loss of our social structure. Mm-hmm. And with my mother's death, you know, I am so grateful for how things happened with my mom. I was able to be there with her. The hospital just kind of knew what was going on. They relaxed the rules for us so that my brother and I could just stay with her 24/7. And she had lost the ability to swallow. Her muscles just stopped working. Hmm. And I told her, I said, you know, it's been a few days since you've had anything to eat. You know, you can't even take a sip of water without choking. And I told her, I said, you know, we really only have a matter of days. Are you ready to die? And she went, yes. I was like, well, okay. And it was so beautiful to be able to say it right. and let her kind of guide what she needed, because it wasn't about me at this point. It was about what she needed in that moment, which was to acknowledge what was happening and to face it head on. And at that point, like, I don't know how she got the energy, but she talked for 2.5 days. Wow. And like almost nonstop. Like I heard stories I had never heard before and we were able to sing and laugh and cry. And she was able to call her siblings and say goodbye, which was really beautiful and heartbreaking all at the same time. Mm-hmm. She recorded messages for my children. Wow. So that they had that for themselves. And she kept saying over and over, like, you know, if this is the way to, you know, if we have to die, this is the way to do it. With your children there, with everything being acknowledged. We talked about the differences between her death and my father's, mm-hmm. about how we wish we would have known. We could have done things so differently. So it was really a beautiful, beautiful death with her, and a releasing and letting go. And I know how blessed we were to have that in that moment, because there were so many people that were in hospitals and they couldn't say goodbye to their loved ones, or they were saying goodbye over a phone. And so to have that experience just was, it's so precious to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you had, I mean, this is really fascinating, because, I mean, you had, as a young person, you really didn't have any experience with grief or loss, but somehow in you was this understanding of community, of gathering, of, yeah. of coming together. How did yeah. that, like, was that just part of who you are?
Yeah, oh, I think
most people kind of run from that, right? You know, yeah. and yeah. they don't talk about things at the deathbed. It's, you know, they use humor as maybe a way out of not getting to the real stories and the real deep things that people want to share. But somehow you were able to, I guess, as a personality, as a daughter, to be able to create a community of openness or sharing.
Yeah, I think, you know, it really. There was something very innate with when my father was dying, right? Mm-hmm. That it just became, this is what we do. It's birth. And so we go through the pains of birth. We, you know, we gather, we, you know, hold each other. And then, you know, 15 years later with my mother's death, I had grown in my spirituality, of course, and really had a very different view on life. And community. But I also, you know, I had gone through and done my own work in terms of, I went through a grief coaching program, actually the Grief Coach Academy. Sure. And so having those tools where I wanted to talk about grief, I, you know, ever since my father died, I would listen to, read books, and I would listen to things. And Ram Dass was such a big part of, you know, how he lived in his philosophy on holding space for people who were dying. I just didn't know how to incorporate it. Right. And so by the time, you know, my mother died, it was such a blessing to be able to say that. And I, you know, we had talked about things a few years before when her older sister was dying. And her daughter was like, "You can't die." Like, she was just like, "I'll jump off a bridge if you die." Like, oh my God, and my mom and I'm like, "I will never say that to you." She was horrified because of the responsibility that puts on the parent, you know, on the other who's dying. And at that point, it's so not about my feelings. My feelings, yes, I'm going to miss you. And yes, but you raised me to be strong enough to know that I can do this. Right. And this is part of life. It's just part of life, is the letting go. And, you know, regardless of what your belief system is, you know, for me, it comes down to physics too. We're all energy, and energy can't be destroyed. So it just continues on a different form. And so for me, that gives me so much peace that it's like, I don't know what's next, but I know that we continue. And so for me, it's so natural to talk about grief and death and loss now, mm-hmm. that this is why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, and I wish I could say that, you know, 2020 was kind of the end of the loss, you know, the grief journey for me, but it was only, I think, preparing me for what was next.
Yeah. And I mean, and that, I mean, that part of your story, you know, is a very, it's a very powerful part. And it's, you know, you go through, you know, a grief experience of your mother and father. And, but now it's like a traumatic death.
Yeah.
You're going to experience. Yeah. And so share a little bit of that story if you're able to, and
sure.
what made the grief different, or was it a different type of grief that you're experiencing, you know, following that?
Absolutely. So, it was very different, you know, in kind of leading up to it. So 2020 lost a lot of family. 2021, I went through a acquisition of the company that I was working for. So we were experiencing these losses of, like, whole departments were just gone. And you didn't, again, you didn't get a chance to come together and say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, okay, 2022, we got this. This is going to be an okay year and kind of a year of recovery. And everything changed on March 21st of 2022. I received a Facebook message in the evening about 9 o'clock from this woman. I think I had met her maybe once, and she's like, I'm, you know, your brother's neighbor, please give me a call. And I called her, and I knew right away what had happened. I just knew in my bones. And she said, I don't know how to tell you this, but they're both gone. And my reaction was, she killed him. My sister-in-law had killed my brother. And I knew that in my bones. Turns out that she had planned his murder. And a few hours later, she committed suicide. And that moment of hearing that my brother was gone and he was killed intentionally, mm-hmm. it's a different kind of grief. I mean, it was a different kind of shock, because you don't expect that to happen. Mm-hmm. And there was a part of me that was in the emotion of it and the shock of it. And there was another part that kind of pulled out and go, what do I do? Like, what, how am I supposed to process this? Like, it was a very interesting moment of kind of being in it, but being apart, you know, apart from it. But then I'm having to tell my kids, I'm having to call my daughter in the middle of the night and tell her that her uncle was killed. All of a sudden I'm on a phone with the sheriff's department and figuring out what's going on. And I stayed up all night and waiting until it was time, you know, so that I could call the family. And I was reaching out to her step siblings as well. And she had struggled with mental illness, that she really didn't get help for. I think she had been struggling all her life. And my brother, I came to realize that my brother had made this commitment, and for him, commitment was everything, duty and honor and commitment. Mm-hmm. And his vow of taking care of her was what kept him there in an abusive relationship and he never talked about it. Like, yeah. I saw it, and I would, you know, I had conversations with him and said, you're not married to her anymore. You're married to her disease. She's not able to kind of fulfill that commitment to a marriage because she's so far gone. She's not able to help herself, mm-hmm. and you can't help her. Mm-hmm. But for him, it was his duty. And so I've come to accept that. But that first month was so extremely painful, the first few days, because I was contacted by her lawyer less than 24 hours after finding this out. And it threw me in a panic. And so what that did for my grief in terms of, like, all of a sudden I'm in this devastating spot of, I just lost my brother. He was murdered, you know, he was shot, and it was intentional. And then I get a call from her lawyer, and it threw me into this. It's almost like everything paused in terms of my grief. I had to put it aside because I'm like, what am I getting into? Like, what is being thrown at me in terms of the legal aspects? And now my body is into this fight or flight. Mm-hmm. And so intense, like, what do I have to do? I had to get a lawyer. I had to get a lawyer within 3 days of this happening. It was just this process of, like, managing so many different aspects of his death, of what do I do now? Here's all of a sudden this law, this legal thing that's going on. And I'm like, I tried to process all of it was too much. It was just sort of, okay, what do I have to do today? And I had to fly out to Kansas. That's where they were living at the time. And I knew a few people there. Like, my mother had lived there during her final years. And I got really close with one of her caregivers who treated my mom like it was her mom. And, you know, Fred just took me in, Fredonia, and she's like, you're staying with us the entire time. Mm-hmm. So, oh, okay, you know. And she's like, doesn't matter, we're family, you're staying. I said, okay, I don't know how long I'm going to be there, but okay. And I knew I was walking into this community that knew both my brother and my sister-in-law. They're going to be grieving. They're in shock, just like I am. And they're not going to understand what happened. They're not going to understand that this was intentional. And I knew I couldn't walk in there holding any kind of anger, because one, my belief system is, you know, anger is, if I hold anger against anybody else, it only falls on me. Mm-hmm. And so I was very intentional about, before I left, that I needed to let go of that anger that I had for my sister-in-law, because she had already taken my brother's life. I wasn't going to give her mine. And that's what anger does. It just, mm-hmm. it takes my own life. So I had to walk into that community and hold space for these people so that they could grieve, that they could understand. It was important for me to speak the truth, but without running someone in the ground, right? I don't want to, you know, it's not what my brother would have wanted. Right. Even though she killed him, that was his wife that he loved. Mm-hmm. When I was going through the house afterwards, her birthday was a few days after she had killed him. And I found a birthday card that he had written to her that said, I still look at you as the woman that I fell in love with. Mm-hmm. And so you're battling all of these emotions, right? If, like, this is how my brother saw her and wanted to see her. And yet she, through her own disease and through her own anger and how much she had lost, she had alienated everybody else in her life. And my brother was really the only person who was there for her. And instead of embracing that, she hated it and she resented it. to the point where she could go on. So that was, it's been a process to handle my grief, to handle the community's grief, to honor my brother mm-hmm. in that space, which was really important to me. Mm-hmm. I needed to make sure that his memory was one of, that it wasn't about his final days, that it was about how he lived, which was with love and compassion and always being there for other people. He never, like I said, he never spoke about his own troubles with anyone. He just held space for everybody else.
You lifted up his story.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah. Something came to mind here, Audrey, when you were sharing. And I'm not sure how to articulate this, but you know, there's this phrase we always hear that it takes a, you know, a village to raise a child. And I couldn't help but thinking it takes a village to help us grieve as well. You know, like sometimes yeah. people think that this is an individual event only. And we're told that sometimes, well, you know, you'll figure it out. You have a unique way of doing it. We do. All those things are true. But when I hear your story, it always includes community, the importance of the community yeah. in the individual's grief journey. And it seems that when you went to that small town in Kansas City, was it, or in Kansas?
Topeka.
You know, it was like, this was a whole community that needed to somehow come together in their own way, you know, yeah. to grieve together in their own unique way, but still together. And yeah. so I'm really curious to your understanding of, you know, moving away from this kind of individual grief kind of thing to a community grief kind of model, mm-hmm. I would say that, you know, we need people in this journey.
Oh, absolutely. I am. You know, and our grief is individual, and yet it's communal. I mean, the person that we lost had connections. My brother was loved by so many people and respected by so many people that it was so important to me to make sure that we all had a space. That I was still speaking my truth, but doing it in a way that was, you know, people knew that this was intentional. I let them know. Yeah. Like, you know, this wasn't a crime of passion. This wasn't, so this was planned. Right. Mm-hmm. And we're here to celebrate my brother. And, you know, I planned his and held his, memorial, his celebration of life myself. Because it, for me, it was the only thing that I had control over. And, you know, one of his friends was the funeral director in town, right? And Ed was like, oh, is she going to be able to pull this off? And I did. And it was really beautiful to have people come up and talk about their stories about my brother. And for people who didn't want to, weren't able to speak, because a lot of people have a hard time, you know, expressing their emotions, especially when they're in that sense of grief and loss. I had them write it down and we burned the paper, like, so that it was kind of released to him. And it's all these little rituals that we can do individually and collectively, but there's this power in community. We're social beings. That's how we evolved, was with each other. And it's so important to remember that when we're grieving. And it's so easy to forget it because we're so stuck in our own, you know, our own dark pit, you know, and we're stuck in the cave. Yeah. And it's so hard to see that there's light. But once you come out of that and realize that there's people that are gathered for you mm-hmm. and that you can be a part of their healing. And I think that's what truly helped me was to be a part of their healing. I couldn't do it any other way. I didn't know. And I think that's just how I've always lived, is this, in this sense of community, in the sense that, you know, we're only as strong as the least among us. So for me, doing it on my own, like, I knew when I got stuck in my stuff, and it's okay to kind of cocoon up and to just be there, and then remember that at least, and I had a core group of people around me that would always pull me out, were there. They let me alone when I needed to be. And sometimes they would just sit with me and let me cry or let me scream or let me just be silent. But there was always somebody that was there.
I really love the way that you, I would say that you changed the dominant story, you know, which was the murder,
into
an alternative story, which was your brother's story and who he was, you know. And so often people get stuck in these dominant stories that don't go anywhere except, like you say, in anger or whatever. But you change that around. And I love it because there's a spiritual saying that says the truth will set you free. Right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're saying. Like, you had to share the truth. You know, here's the facts, here's the truth, in order to be set free to discover and make it something different and something beautiful in the midst of the hardness.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I really believe that there's so much of life that happens. It just happens. There's no, you know, reason for it. There's no, it's just painful things happen, and they happen all the time.
Yes.
And what I truly believe is that it's our thoughts that create our suffering. So when you talk about the truth, what truth am I thinking of? Because our beliefs are just thoughts we continue to think. And realizing that even in those hard moments, we have a choice. And that's where I think people get stuck, is that they don't realize they have choice in the matter. It's like, well, no, this is what's true. This is what's true.
Right.
But that truth, that version of the truth, is causing you pain and suffering, because we keep reliving it and we keep reliving it and we keep reliving it. And the longer that we hold on to that, we forget that there's also other things that are true. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing that, you know, we really teach through the Grief Coach Academy, is really looking at our thoughts. What's really true? What's bringing you peace? Is there something else? Is there something else that's also true? And when you go through this process and you realize, like, oh, this other thing is just as true, there's something that happens. It's like we're retraining our brain, but there's something that happens where we get to release, like, it's like the brain can't hold two truths at once. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, well, yes, that's true, but there's this other thing over here that's just as true.
Right.
And this one feels better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to think about this one, and I'm going to let that go. And it's a really powerful practice to learn how to open up to kind of this idea of that there's another truth that's out there, that I can choose to think about something that's going to bring me peace instead of bring me pain.
Well, you're being a grief coach right now as you as you teach our listeners. It's wonderful. And, you know, I just want to transition here at the end, because, you know, you've shared some very powerful stories with us in your journey, which led you into becoming a grief coach and being part of and having this thing called the Grief Academy.
Yes.
Could you just, I just kind of, I'd like you to focus in upon maybe you know, thinking about a grief coach, and you've had many experiences with many people. And I'm not saying that, you know, everybody has so many different questions, but are there, you know, what do you kind of think is the biggest challenge for people as, I mean, as they kind of, you know, enter into this grief journey? Like, what do you hear over and over and over again? You know, it's kind of dominant. Yeah. And then how do you navigate that with somebody?
You know, a lot of what I hear is about the regret or the guilt. Mm. You know, it's the regret of, well, I should have done this. I could have done that, you know, or why didn't they do that? I mean, I remember thinking that going through my own process with my brother is, why didn't he leave?
Right.
You know, why did he sacrifice? Why did his life have to be sacrificed? And, you know, there's also this guilt of, I'm still here. Why them? Why not me? You know, those are the hard things to get through. But if we can start, and you can't tackle things all at once, you know, you can't tackle everything, but it's like, what is the one thought that today is giving you the most pain? let's focus in on that one thing, and let's work through that to go, you know, this is what it is. And is it past or present? You know, is it, you know, the past only brings up regret. The future is anxiety, and our only point of power is in the present moment. And if we can come back and settle in and really feel present, then we get to express everything. Like, where is this feeling when I believe this thought? Where is it holding in my body? How does it feel? How does this grief feel? How does this regret feel? Mm-hmm. Is it in your stomach? Is it in your heart? Is it in your, you know, are your muscles all tense? Where is it living physically in your body? And then allow that. How do you treat yourself? How do you treat others? How does this impact your life? So then you get to hear, like, the cost of this thought. Mm-hmm. And then you shift into, can I just accept it? It's what happened. Can I just accept it as if a cloud passing by or rain falling? It just is. If I can accept that, then there's an opening to go, what else could be true? You know, for me, he shouldn't have sacrificed his life became he should have sacrificed his life. He did sacrifice his life. How is that true? For him, what I came to realize is that for my brother, like I said, it was honor and duty. The moment he said, I do, the moment he made those vows, his life was for her. I knew that. You know, when my mother couldn't live on her own, it was his responsibility as the oldest to take care of her. And that's my mother, and I'm going to do this. So this was just part of his nature. So who am I to judge or think that that's not what should have happened?
Right.
And by allowing that and understanding that, then I could say, you know what? He lived his life and he died in a way that is in accordance with who he was as a person. Mm-hmm. And that gave me a lot of peace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's really good.
And so it really is this process of going through and identifying one thing. And if you can just take one thing, it's like taking a brick out of the wall and allowing a little bit of light in. Mm. And then the next time we take another brick out and we let in the light, it slowly becomes a part of your thought process, so that automatically I start questioning my thoughts of, well, is this true? Like, is this, I'm thinking this, but this is causing me a lot of discomfort or pain. Is there another way I can think about it? And after a while of really working in this process, which is called the peace method, it becomes so innate in who you are that you start kind of always going toward, well, I want to feel better in my life. We're here. Mm-hmm. And we're here for a purpose, and we're here for a reason. And I can't live my purpose if I am constantly in pain and choosing something that's painful. Mm. And for me. I want to be here fully present for myself, for my children, for my family, and for my clients, so that we can help navigate this journey together. And we're all going to face loss. It's inevitable. Like, I read something, it's called From the Wild Side of Sorrow. And there was a phrase in there that said, everything you lose, you will, or everything you love, you will lose. And it's like, and it's true. And you can use that as this motivation of, how do I want to live? I want to enjoy and soak up every single moment. And I want people to realize that even though you can have these devastating losses, that there is hope and beauty in life. And I think about what's going on in Maui right now in Lahaina and how many people are still missing. You've got to, you know, the world is grieving with them. And yet the people of Hawaii and Maui are, they're in it. And they're going to be in it for a while. And it changes who we are and how we think when you have a global tragedy like that and a global loss. And yet for those individuals, they're going to be working through this for a long time. But there is beauty and there is a sense of purpose in life that these people are going to come through, and they're going to find that strength of, how do we live going forward?
Well, Audrey, I am thankful that the call grabbed you.
Me too.
To be part of people's life as they grieve. And I want to thank you so much for sharing your story. And how do people get a hold of you and the Grief Academy?
Yes. So you can find us at www.griefcoachacademy.com. You can email me. You can contact me through the website, griefcoachacademy.com. And also, if you want to reach out to me personally, it's audrey@griefcoachacademy.com.
Okay. And we'll put that in the show notes too.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm also on Instagram, and it's just the, at Grief Coach Academy or at Audrey Laura White. Okay. And, I'd love to hear from people and see how I can help support their journey.
That was fantastic. Well, the phrase that I'm thinking of right now is one brick at a time. I love that that image, bringing in the light, but it's a process and it takes time, but there's light. There's light.
There is light. So, and there is hope.
And I see that in your life in bountiful measures. So thanks again for being on the program.
Thank you so much, Rick. It was just such a blessing and honor to be a part of your podcast and getting to know you over this time. And it's just, life is a beautiful thing.
Yes, it is. And for those who are listening on today, thank you for being here. And please reach out to Audrey if you would like to contact her. And please, again, be reminded that these podcasts need to be shared. So fire these off to your family and friends in abundance so that people can benefit also from these wonderful interviews and these people that I'm so privileged and blessed to be able to have on the podcast. So again, great to have you. It's all about the story, and you take good care. This is Rick Berg signing off. Till next time.
Thanks for joining us today on It's All About the Story, Grief Stories That Connect Us. We hope this podcast was encouraging to you. There are so many different types of loss. Why not take time to listen to some of the other unique stories in this podcast series? Feel free to share them with family, friends, neighbors. If you'd like to receive notifications about the next episode in the series, please subscribe. And we'll make sure you don't miss out. We hope that you'll be joining us again on It's All About the Story, Grief Stories That Connect Us. with host Rick Berg. Take good care.